The views and opinions expressed during the following show are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect that of KPOV, LPFM, or Bend Community Radio. Hey, I'm Dawn Newton. Welcome to Open Air. I want to thank everyone for joining me this afternoon. I am Dawn Newton, and you are listening to Open Air. In the studio with me today, we've got a gentleman here. Bob Spike is here. And Bob, he's got quite a story and quite a history. I'm extremely fascinated. He is the founder of the mountaineering club Cascade Mountaineers. He created the traditionalmountaineering.org, a website. It's an incredibly informative website, providing free information and instruction about basic and advanced mountain climbing safety. And we're going to be talking a little bit more in detail about that. And then he's also taught many courses in the adult extension division, I think for about 6 years, at Central Oregon Community College. Bob, welcome to Open Air. Thanks for coming in.
Well, hi, Dawn, and it's very nice to meet you. I haven't seen you before, and so you called up out of the blue. I had a nice voice, and so here I am.
Thought it'd be safe to come on the air.
Yes, I did.
Well, let's start a little bit about your history, because I've been reading about you. I mean, obviously what you're doing today, this time in your life, but you've got quite a history, too, that kind of is very, very interesting. You have a history in real estate. You have history in fraud investigative work for the FDIC and the RTC.
That's true, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that and how it's taken you into mountaineering.
Well, I'll go back to college. I met my wife at Pomona College in Claremont, California. And by the way, it's very hard to get into, and they only have about 700 people, but it's free. It's free, very expensive education. So if any of you kids are getting excellent grades and doing a lot of stuff, well, perhaps you can make an application to Pomona College in Claremont, California. So I studied ancient and medieval history and art and architecture, and my wife studied French, and so we were completely prepared for the job market when we graduated from the military. In the meantime, between college and going on the job market, spent like 4 years in the military, and I went through basic training, NCO school, OCS, and then came out a first lieutenant, and I was in charge of a tank group there at Fort Knox, Kentucky. And I was pretty careful to always volunteer to take all the courses and classes and everything. So I spent the entire Korean War taking classes at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and was company commander there. So when we came out of the Army, I found that there wasn't a single job that I could do. And a friend of mine said, why don't you try real estate? You don't have to really know anything to to take real estate. I wonder if folks know what you do, Dawn. And so I was hired on by Coldwell Banker and Company, which at that time was really hard to get into. It was kind of a club kind of thing.
Right.
And they said, do you want to be in property management or in loans? And I thought, well, gee, my wife and I would like to buy a house and so forth when we can, and maybe I'd learn something in the loan department. So I spent about 15 years in loans and suffered through various periods like this, where there were layoffs and all of that. So shall I go on?
Yeah, I'm curious about the how you got into the fraud investigative work.
Well, that comes after the early 90s. We had the Resolution Trust Corporation, which was founded to take care of the problems of having, if I can express it this way, having Wall Street draw all the money out of the savings and loans to create a mortgage-backed security. And they changed the law at that time, Congress did, and it proved to be a disaster for the lending industry. And we did have a big spike in values and then a huge crash. So I was actually the acting chief fraud investigator for the west coast of the United States. And I closed down savings and loans in Alaska and all the way down to San Diego and so forth. I had 17 people and so on. Yeah,
that's, I'm surprised they haven't pulled you back out of retirement with our current conditions bring some of that expertise back.
Sure. Well, that's good.
But, and then doing all of this, the employment career, I mean, I've got, for 14 years, you were a long distance runner.
Oh, yes, yes. I got injured a little bit taking a class on how to go a little faster, and I got injured, and I never hardly ran again.
You toured Europe for 3 months in a VW bus, not just by yourself, but this is with your family, your wife and your three children.
Three children, 12, 14, and 16. And we all lived in that VW bus, and it was just great.
I think each one of these is a story all by themselves. Sailboat racing.
Yes, when we moved to Fullerton, California, and by the way, my first house was $12,750, and it was a shake roof house with a 2-car garage in a nice new neighborhood in Garden Grove in California, a very hot district and all that, and it was 1,250 square feet, so it had the it was $10 a square foot for the house. And a lot and all that. So I don't know where I was going with that. But.
Well, I think just comparative to this market, that's pretty interesting all by itself.
Right.
So, and then you've also traveled the
United
States.
Now I pick up the I'm 81 years old, so you have to kind of give me a little leeway here. So when we built a home in Fullerton, and we had a lot of fun because I was making loans on custom residences. And I was not a mortgage broker. I was a mortgage banker.
Okay.
And made loans for Aetna Life Insurance Company. And the first loans we made were 30% down. They were 4.75% loans for the early, late 60s. And then it gradually crept up. And we thought, oh, gosh, nobody can buy a home when it went up to 6.25 and so on. And so we sold our home in Fullerton as empty nesters and moved to Balboa Island, and that's where we got back in the boats.
Well, I just find it interesting, actually quite fascinating, just the spectrum of where you have been throughout your life so far.
Eight decades. So
yeah, that's it. It's been, just reading about it, it's like there's no way I can summarize you in two sentences as far as a very simple introduction, which is a huge compliment.
Oh,
that's
thank
what
you.
That is. Mm. Then you also took an interest in mountain climbing.
Yes. Actually, that kind of came out of the running. I can tell folks this, that when in the mid to late 70s, there started to become in towns across the nation little mom-and-pop stores called backpacking stores. And they sold little stoves, MSR stoves, and mm-hmm. alcohol stoves, and very lightweight tents and backpacks, and Kelty got started then, and many of the major people like Patagonia and so forth all started in that time. And I really got interested in that. And we were up in Yosemite doing the Europe thing in the VW bus and so forth with the kids. And we picked up a couple of hitchhikers, and they had these things, and they said they were backpacks. And what they did was they would hike down from Tuolumne Meadows down to Yosemite. And we said, boy, that sounds like a lot of fun. So I did that in a couple of days with my son, and then we left our teenagers, by themselves, thinking back. And my wife and I did it. So she was interested in it, too. So a friend of mine said, Bob, you're interested in hiking and all that kind of thing. He said, have you ever thought of climbing mountains? I said, oh, I don't like heights and everything. So he actually worked for Great Western Savings and Loan, and an associate of mine. And he said, well, let me buy you a ticket to the Sierra Club's basic mountaineering training course. And I said, well, I don't know what I could learn because I know all the catalogs and everything that's in the backpacking stores and REI and that kind of thing. And he says, well, Bob, he said something like this, because I like to think that I originated this. He who knows not that he knows not. So I didn't know that there were all kinds of things to know about the sport of mountaineering and that kind of thing. And I learned, for instance, that mountaineering has 6 levels. Everyone walks on the trail. That's one. Number two, everybody walks off the trail, or a lot of people do. Number three, people scramble. They have to hold on to the equipment, like the microphone here in the,
right.
in the studio. And fourth is if you lose your grip on the mountain and you fall, well, you'll be seriously hurt or get killed. And that's called fourth class. And the fifth class is what the people do at Smith Rock, the gymnastic athletic folks who are built that way. And then the sixth class is rappelling off or what the fellows did when they climbed the nose in Yosemite and all that sort of thing. So that was one of the things I learned. And I learned I really enjoyed this, and I was good at it because I'd been doing all this running. So I was very aerobic, and I got kind of long legs. And in fact, my Pacific Crest Trail name is Daddy Long Legs. So anyhow, that's where we are. So I enjoyed it a lot, and I became an assistant leader, and then I took a year off, and I never hiked at all. It was because there wasn't a social thing. There was nobody to hike with. Mm. And so I came back, and very shortly I became the chair of the whole mountaineering training committee of the Angeles chapter of the Sierra Club. And people think of the Sierra Club as being tree huggers and all that, and that's true. But a lot of folks from the very beginning were hikers and climbers and all that sort of thing. So we trained actually 1,000 people who didn't know anything, or thought they did, but they didn't really know anything about mountaineering, each year with 250 volunteer leaders. And we did about 200 people in the what's called the advanced course, advanced mountaineering training, and I was head of that too. And so it was a great time. And then I was chair for 3 years, and then I decided it'd be nice to race sailboats. Quit.
Quit. Hey, if you're just tuning in, I am Dawn Newton, and you're listening to Open Air. And with me today is Bob Spike. He's the founder of the Mountaineering Club Cascade Mountaineers. He's an instructor on mountaineering. He's got this incredible website, traditionalmountaineering.org. I encourage everyone to check it out. It's incredibly overwhelming and very informative. Now, Bob, I was reading that you have summited over 300 peaks.
Yes.
Is this worldwide, or is this?
No. In California and Washington and Oregon and over in Europe, and everybody says, what was your biggest peak and so forth? Well, I've made a little note here to say the Matterhorn in Zermatt, Switzerland, so I wouldn't forget it. I'm not a professional mountaineer because I was working in the mortgage banking industry and working for the FDIC and had 3 kids to support and get to college and all that. And so
now it's a huge passion.
Yeah, well, it is. And it's something that it's one reason we landed in Bend, actually. In fact, I understand at least some people at the hospital who are in personnel tell people that they should look at this website and they can see all the outdoor stuff that goes on here in Bend and parades and everything.
It's a fabulous website.
Yeah,
with information.
Lots of pictures of the festivals and everything, and I'm always careful to take the prettiest girls and the handsomest men and the brightest children, so they probably have a little lopsided view of everybody in Bend. but anyhow, that so I went up to COCC because again, mountaineering is a social sport. It should be. There are loners, and I really don't like it. And I did it for 3 summers. I was a volunteer ranger for the Deschutes Fort Rock district of the Sierra Club. And I thought I was training to go out with a ranger, you know, pal along with a ranger. And they said, no, we've given you this training. You go by yourself. And I said, what? Yes, you go by yourself. You get your maps and your compass. And boy, did I do that, because I was brand new to all this, and they would send me off to some far-off place and lake and so forth, and I had to get back. So I became very interested in map and compass.
So tell me what you're doing today, because you're doing a lot of classes and seminars, and you're wanting to get some information out to people.
Oh, thank you very much. That's a great segue into the fact that a week from tonight, the subtitle is How to Find Your Way Back to Your Car. The real title is Staying Found with Map, Compass, and GPS, and it's on Wednesday. And in view of the recession, depression, I've heard that in a depression, prices fall, so I've reduced the price from $40 to $30, so it's a really good bargain. And instead of on a Saturday morning, I've got it at the Environmental Center at on Kansas Street in downtown. Here, just a stone's throw from the studio. And that would be from 6 to 8 or so, and actually we have the room till 9.
So you would say you've been, climbing for what, past almost 40 years? Is that right?
Gosh, yes.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
What are the biggest concerns, especially, you know, since now you do live in Central Oregon, people climbing the Three Sisters, Mount Jefferson, even going out in the backcountry, what are the most alarming things that you're seeing that could be easily remedied by information that you're providing or that you would like to get to people?
Right. Well, I sort of have a neat thing written on the website, and it's something to the effect that hiking the hills and summiting peaks are full of risks that are hidden to the uninformed, and that by a little bit of information about the experiences of others, about good gear, about the traditions of the sport, or I think it's a sport, hiking and mountaineering, you know, snowshoeing and all that, in part, and that's the disclaimer part, I put it in capitals, in part, those risks can be mitigated. And, of course, without the risks, it wouldn't be near as much fun. So I guess that the website has kind of taken a little bit of a bent where I'm doing kind of a basic mountaineering training course, an advanced mountaineering training course, and I smoosh it together. So we go from basic to advanced all on one page, and the pages can be like a foot and a half long or 2 feet long sometimes. And not constrained by space at all. And so there you go. And I've completely lost my train of thought.
I'll bring you back. I'm curious, especially right now with the weather, we're starting to get some more spring-like weather. We're getting those 50-degree days and sometimes a little warmer. And then, of course, we're dumping back down to 20 and 30. That people are going to start getting antsy to get out and start climbing and getting out into some of those venues up in the mountains. What's the biggest concern right now during this time of year?
Don, you just hit it right on the nose. What happens during a cold spell and a little rain and that kind of thing and no snow and is that ice develops. And I used to be a cross-country skier, and on many days we were not cross-country skiing, we were cross-country clattering. The skis would clatter on the ice.
Right.
And I could be standing there and boom, I'd be down. I just fall down. I skiing wasn't my thing. So we have a nice dump of snow, like 4 inches or 12 inches of snow. And everybody says, boy, it's a bluebird day, and it's just the right day to go up there. Well, it's going to avalanche. It's going to drift off. It's going to settle down and so forth. So the hot days, the bluebird days right after a cold spell, are among the most dangerous to go anywhere that's steep. And, of course, you can go anywhere, anytime without fear of avalanches if you stay away from avalanche slopes. And avalanche slopes are 35 degrees or so, and they have a certain aspect, that is to say they're on the east side of the mountain or the north side or whatever it is. And the volcanoes are very prone to that because there aren't big features that hold it. It's all gravel, and it can just slide. So it's quite dangerous to be out there and have something slide. And even the very experienced can do that. On the Thayer Glacier, people were mysteriously reporting as being hiking on the Thayer Glacier. Well, we all wondered about that, and so we kind of checked and checked and checked and checked, and we found that the people were actually climbing North Sister, and they came down, and they decided to take a shortcut down this steep snow area, which is the Thayer Glacier, And the glacier moved, and you had a broken pelvis, two broken legs, another broken leg, and people buried up to their shoulders, and other people who were off to one side were okay, and they had to be rescued. And there have been four or five accidents on Mount Hood where ice has fallen off and killed one woman, and killed a man too, I guess, there. So it's all on my website. I chronicle all of those and try to draw an experience that people can enjoy. So we cover the experiences of others, not just my experiences, but remembered experiences, but the experiences of a lot of people.
Yeah, I've noticed that you do cover a vast array of different incidences of, you know, positive and some of the tragic mountain climbing experiences that have happened. And I noticed that you've had a lot of commentary in there as well.
Right.
Kind of an expert in
the
field.
Right. Yeah. And actually I got a special mention in a publication of the American Alpine Club, which is called Mountaineering. Accidents in North American Mountaineering. And it's actually in the 60th year, and they've published for 20 or 30 years a small booklet. It was in paperback, and it cost about $7 or $11. And they cover all of the accidents that occur in different mountain ranges. And I've contributed probably 15 or, well, I don't know, maybe 20 from Central Oregon in this general area. And the idea is not to second guess and say coulda, woulda, shoulda, but to say what can we learn from this experience so these people weren't injured or didn't die in vain. And so I've been pretty good in that accident analysis.
Well, we are talking with Bob Spike. This is Open Air. I'm Dawn Newton. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, Bob has brought in a backpack with him full of all the essentials, and he's going to share that with us. And we'll do a little bit more talking about that. Then we're going to be joined. Also, we've got Bob number two is going to be showing up. He's going to be joining us. He's got a special event coming up this week on Friday that we want to share with everyone and let them know this is happening. So we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Open Air. This is Dawn Newton, and with me, we've been talking with Bob Spike. He is the founder of the Mountaineering Club, Cascade Mountaineers. We've been talking about his history and his passion for mountaineering, and then he teaches in the area and has some messages that he'd like to get out for everybody. And Bob, we had talked earlier about some of the essential items, the four simple responsibilities. Why don't you touch on that for us? And you brought some items, too, that you said are must-have.
Right.
When you're heading out.
Right. Well, we talked a little bit about how there are risks in all kinds of backcountry travel, and it doesn't matter if you're on a snowmobile or walking or snowshoeing or a Nordic skier. There are still risks, and they're hidden generally to the uninformed. And so the website, of course, what it does is tells people about some of the risks and everything. Now, a theme of all of the accidents that have occurred that have a good or bad outcome has been really kind of put down here into four simple responsibilities, which I sort of dreamed up. And these are taught to search and rescue groups and the basic mountaineering training course and so forth. And it's by the mountaineers and the Mazamas and all that. The first one and most important one, I think, is tell a reliable person where you're going to go and what you're going to do and when you'll be back. And then you need to agree with them that they will call for search and rescue if you're not back by an agreed upon time. And so that is so important. And unfortunately, the reliable person has to be told, well, you're my reliable person, and I'm expecting you to call at 5 o'clock on Sunday if I'm not back. And I really mean it. Because many times they don't take that very seriously. So search and rescue wants to know where you parked your car and what you're going to do and all that, those sorts of things. The second responsibility, which is second in importance, I think, is to dress for the forecast weather and take a day pack. Every individual has to bring their own day pack with enough individualized clothing and gear that they can stay out pretty much overnight. And you can be standing waving your arms and exercising under a tree if necessary. You don't have to be comfortable, but you shouldn't be getting hypothermia. And people are told to are taught to bring what are now called the 10 essential systems, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And the third thing, of course, is to carry a topo map of the area, base plate compass, and I ask people if they know how to use a compass. Well, everybody knows how to use a compass. And I say, well, how do you use a compass as a protractor on the map? What? They don't know. So he who knows not that he knows not.
That would be me.
So, and where do you get a topo map and so forth? So we're covering that in a class, which is coming up in a week, which is Map, Compass, and GPS class, $30 at the Environmental Center. And they can go to the website, look it up, see a flyer on it, and call me up or email me. And the fourth nowadays, and this is just in the past year or two or three, it's become apparent that one needs to carry a cell phone or other method of communicating. And what shocked everyone, I'm sure, was that the man who died on the top of Mount Hood phoned his home in Texas. He didn't call for 911 because he knew rescue was impossible, but he phoned his home from Texas with an ordinary digital cell phone. And that got a lot of people interested. Then there was another sad case of a man in, from California who drove up here with his wife and children, and they were stuck, they were stranded, and they were found actually by cell phone pings and so forth. So there's a whole a lot of stuff on the website about that. So those are the four simple responsibilities. Tell a responsible person, dress for the forecast weather, and carry the 10 essentials, carry a map, compass, and GPS, and know how to use them, and carry a digital cell phone, and so forth. For instance, if I was injured on Friday afternoon, I would hate to have to wait till you called for me, Dawn, yeah, on Sunday at 5 o'clock. So I can visually describe what are the 10 essential systems here.
Yeah, let's go through that.
Okay, but there are photographs of this and all that on the website. So I'm wearing a hat, which is a sun hat. I've got gloves, which are lightweight polypropylene gloves, and they're in the top pocket along with my inexpensive GPS. It only costs about $100. The Garmin eTrex H GPS, and I don't sell anything on the website or anything. And then nowadays you'd want to carry a Spot personal locator beacon. For $149, you can have satellite connection in like a sat phone instead of a cell phone, because the cell phone is dependent on the towers.
Right.
The satellite communicator goes on there. And then you have, so you have the GPS map and the compass. And that's there. And then in outside pockets are dark glasses and water bags. Don't carry a heavy Nalgene bottle, which is not good for your health, maybe, anyway. There are new ones now. But carry these bags, and you can see the mold growing inside and so forth. You can see about them on the website or find them at REI. And then, real quick, just going through here, I'm just pulling things out and dumping them on the floor of the studio here.
That's okay.
Are a couple of different jackets, a light vest and a little heavier jacket. And this is kind of a winter type of thing. They're right on the top. Then this is a 6 ounce, $30 bivy sack.
Okay.
And you can't shelter on snow without this insulation, which I have on the outside of the pack here, and this bag. It's impossible. You will freeze to death. This is a big shower cap that goes over the pack because the pack is not waterproof. This is my red bag carries Clif bars, and jerky is not satisfactory. This is about five other hats, including a down hat that goes all the way over, a mask for my face in case it's really blowing, and so forth, and a wool scarf. Wool is good, too.
Right.
You're supposed to stay away. You must stay away from cotton. Now, let me divert to that for a minute. I'm taking Bob's time
here. No, we're fine.
Okay. The problem with cotton is that if it gets wet, it stays sopping wet. The fibers of cotton actually are absorbent, A-B, absorbent. And all of these other things like polypropylene and pile, this is a pile shirt, and so on, are adsorbent. They will not absorb water. So for all the high school kids out there and all the parents struggling to keep their growing kids in some kind of insulation, if you have to give them a big, heavy cotton sweatshirt, then for goodness sakes, give them rain gear to go over it and tell them never get that cotton wet with sweat or with water, because you'll lose 70% of the insulating value of that cotton. That's why they say cotton kills.
Now, Bob, on these, the 10 essential items, this is regardless of the time of year.
Well, yes, and it's seasonal. Okay. So in the summertime, I carry like 5 pounds. In the wintertime, I might carry 20 pounds. If I were going to climb a big mountain in the wintertime, I might carry 25, 30 pounds, which would be my essential safety kit.
Okay.
That's why I write that a safety kit, an emergency kit, is dangerous, because everybody thinks of a small kit, you know, a little kit that you can, like, you can put it in an Altoid tin if you're really clever and get it all. And, of course, you can't do that, because the main thing that you're carrying is the clothing. Remember, clothing is the second most important, besides telling responsible person. So the rest of the stuff is all clothing here. Well, this is a wind jacket. Weighs like nothing. These are some of the little essentials, but very, very small. Weighs maybe not even a pound.
Right.
And it has Gatorade and extra batteries and toilet paper and sunscreen and all those things. So those come winter or summer. And then my rain gear is here. And you note that it's really, really lightweight. It's the lightest weight, best acting rain gear that you can get. And the quality of the rain gear is in the design of it. And for instance, I'll name one manufacturer, which I happen to like a lot. It's Patagonia. And it's right here. Everything that Patagonia makes is made to size over undergarments.
Okay.
And it's all slippery. Bob, grab that jacket over there. That's a big, heavy jacket called the Das Parka, and it's all slippery.
Yeah.
And so as you're hiking along, your clothes are not clinging to you and so on. And then this is the next to last, and this is a great big slippy jacket to put on underneath the rain gear. Okay? So this is insulation. So
it's that whole layers.
Yeah, so it's layers to take this, but they're scientific layers. Take the sweat away, then the base insulation, and then additional insulation, and then the outer hard shell layer. And this is the last thing in the pack. You can hold that. It weighs about 5 or 6 ounces, and that's the kind of thing that you should look for, not something that weighs a pound.
Right.
That's it for rain gear. So... that's kind of it. I hate to relinquish the microphone.
No, very good. this information and everything that you've displayed here, and it's on your website as well, this is what you use. And it doesn't, I mean, it's looks like it's not a big investment.
No, it need not be. I mean, what I have, I'm a pro, so
right.
I have like the pants cost $140. Well, you can get the same pants that cost $40.
Well, but at the same time, you don't, you know, put the cost on saving a life or maintaining life as well. I mean, that's what this is all about, is survival.
Right.
And like what we see on the Discovery Channel today and some of those shows that are kind of glorifying that.
Well, they're very misrepresentative, because of course the man goes home to a motel every night along with a film crew of 8 or 10 people when he's supposedly coming down all these steep slopes and sliding and eating worms and things like that.
So, yeah, so yeah, good ratings. It makes for good ratings.
I guess I can't watch it. It's too fakey.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you for coming on. I want to invite you back as things are coming up, or as conditions are changing, or things that the public needs to know.
Sure.
So, and while we're at it, we're going to, you are listening to Open Air, and I'm Dawn Newton. And in the studio with us also is Bob Sant. and he's here to talk to us about. There's an event coming up on Friday. It's basically the community coming together for the community, which I think is something that main reason why I asked for someone to come in, because I think it's I find it uplifting, especially in the times that we're in right now. So Bob, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on Friday?
Okay, well, the idea here is wrapped around the Curiosity Shop and Joyce Scott and the role that she's played in the Bend community for the last 30 years with her shop. The Curiosity Shop has been a great connecting point for the alternative lifestyles and for self-discovery, whether that's spiritual or personal, and alternative therapies and connecting people in the community. When people come to the community, they've always turned to that shop for many years to find, you know, acupuncture or acupressure or different things, even back when they weren't that popular. The Curiosity Shop was making the connections for the community. And it's played such an important role for so many people for so many years. And, you know, as those of us who know Joyce well know, currently she's struggling with the changes that have happened in the community and the gentrification that's happening and pushing out of small businesses and affordability. And a few of us that know her well, we're talking about creating a huge appreciation event to just celebrate what Curiosity Shop has been and to help her through this transition, because she's making some changes in her business. And the minute we started talking, the word spread, and boy, did it open up doors and calls, and people just started flooding in with gifts and therapeutic packages and stuff. So we've got this great evening of with a great dinner donated by the Cascade Culinary Institute up at the college. Julian Darwin is putting that together. We've got all kinds of great therapies. There's going to be a silent auction and raffle with and artwork and food and different things that people have donated to the event. And, of course, we're wrapping music into the evening, because Joyce has always been a great catalyst for bringing music to Bend. Even before a lot of the venues were here that we have now, she was bringing the folk groups, you know, to Bend in her shop downtown, which all of us fondly remember.
Yes.
And really starting that movement of having the folk music down here. So we've got John Nielsen coming to play. Koyo, a very popular local group, is going to be playing throughout the evening. And people are encouraged to bring their own drums too, of course, and get involved in some spontaneous drumming through the evening. So.
Well, and I think it's whose idea was this to do this?
Well, myself and Holly Hutton and Julian Darwin really are the instigators of the Empty Bowls Project that we do every year to feed the homeless. And the power of bringing people together and connecting over a great cause is very strong in our minds. And, you know, Julian and I were talking this year about the struggle Joyce was having in the holiday season, and we just turned to each other and said, let's do it. Let's make an event. You know, we can do this, and it would be a great help for her.
And I understand that this was, to an extent, it was a secret from Joyce. She wasn't aware that this was going to be happening on her behalf.
Right.
And so how did she take it when she found out?
Well, those of us that know Joyce well, and if you know her, you'll know this about her, is that she's a strong-willed person. It's really what has helped her to hold on through all the changes in Bend. But she's not one to say, yes, I need an event to help myself. And we knew that, you know, Joyce may not be as supportive of it as we knew she should be. And it really was about us wanting to open up and show her how much appreciation people have it. Because I'm always running into people everywhere that say, how is Joyce doing? I need to go see her. I care so much about that shop. It played such an important role in this pivotal part of my life. And I just knew that if we did this, it would be an overwhelming success. And the thought of it being secret from Joyce, I thought was kind of a selling point to it, too. If everyone thought, you know, I'm just going to go because it was a surprise event, you know, and they didn't want to miss out on the surprise. And, of course, we knew Joyce would find out because she's so connected in the community.
Well, how was her reaction when...
She was pretty humbled by it. In the end, right now, I think that Joyce is very excited about it. At first, she probably had the reaction that we were expecting, but once she thought about it, she thought, you know, seeing all these people come back together for a great event is going to be such a wonderful evening that I think that she's very excited about it at this point.
Well, I know I had talked with Linda earlier today when she had informed me of the event coming up, and I said, maybe would Joyce be able to come on the studio or even over the phone? I believe she's teaching a class, mm-hmm. and really isn't one to want to be on, doesn't really care for the spotlight.
No, she isn't.
Which is why she is.
But
who
she'll
she is.
Always be there in the background exactly. making the connections, you know. And it was time to turn the table on her with this event and show her that we really appreciate all those connections that she and her shop have been for this community for so long.
And this is taking place on Friday, this Friday.
This Friday.
From 6 yeah. to 10 p.m.
6 to 10, yeah.
And it's going to be at the Benz Community Center, and it's a family-friendly event.
It is, yeah. Five and under are free.
Okay. There'll be a no-host wine and beer bar.
Right.
And it is, everything about the flyer and the information that's being passed out, it's about coming together.
It's
about the community doing something for the community, which I think right now, especially, you know, I keep hating to say these economic times or the situation we're in, but I think it really demonstrates that this is the time to be pulling together.
It really is.
So what does this mean to you to be put this together for her?
It's huge for me. You know, I had Blue Spruce Gallery over in the mill and invited Joyce to share my space for a while because she was losing her space on Galveston. And just getting to know her really well over those 2 years, it just was grating on me that there had to be some way we could, you know, pull everyone together that's played part in the Curiosity Shop for so many years and help Joyce out. And finally, this just happened. You know, I'm with Joyce. The universe just plops things in where they need to be. And this one just happened at the very much at the right time because she's in a transition coming up that I think will take her business in a great new direction. And this is going to be a big help.
So she's going to be moving again.
Yes, most likely.
Okay.
So, and I don't know the details of that, so I won't go into that. But I think also we should mention that it's $10 a person, the tickets for the event. I'm not sure if we had mentioned that yet.
And you can purchase those at the door.
You can purchase at the door. You can or at Gossamer or at Kitchen Compliments or DeVore's Good Food Store or up at the college at the Culinary Arts Institute. And you can also purchase them online if you can't get out and get somewhere. There is a website. Do we want to say that over?
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Great. Yeah, we can do that.
It's at brownpapertickets.com/event/54979.
And I'll make sure that I post this on the Open Air website as well at the KPOV site that I have there. So how has the turnout? How's the response been so far?
It's great. Right now, I don't have exact tallies, but somewhere between 200 and 250 people have bought tickets. And, you know, we can take up to 350, 400, you know, so we'll be selling tickets at the door. And this week, a lot more have sold. I may even be off on my numbers, but the response is just great.
Well, it's like I said, what really inspired me about bringing somebody on for this event is just the fact that it's the community doing it for someone else in the community. And initially it started out as a surprise or a secret in the best of intentions and in the best form possible. So I think that is just something that the community needs to hear more about.
Right. And what we want to see with this is more connections made. You know, that night, some of these people that have over the years been through her shops for various reasons, we want them to connect, you know, to bring them, you know, this is as much about networking as anything Joyce ever does, you know, and people that are new to the community can meet people and make a lot of connections that night with some great people.
Oh, well, I want to thank you for coming on. And Bob, Spike, I want to thank you for coming on as well.
Oh,
and,
sure.
What I neglected to do is for your information, which we did say it, but I want to say it again. What is your website?
Okay. It's www.traditionalmountaineering.org. Or you can Google Alpine Mountaineering. I'll be number one. You can Google Light and Fast Climbing. I'll be number one. You can Google any of the peaks around here, I'll be number one. You can Google the three words map, compass, and GPS, and out of 4,500 people mentions on the net, I'll be number one and number two. So it is $30, and you need to register in advance, and we'll have a good time. We'll save you money because you won't have to buy an expensive GPS. You'll buy a less expensive GPS. Thank you very much. Wednesday. I'm almost out of breath. Wednesday a week from tonight at the Environmental Center, but please do call me so we are sure we have a chair for you.
And also, let me just, Bob Spike, the spelling of your last name is S-P-E-I-K.
Yes, same as the alpine flower, sweet-smelling alpine flower of northern Germany.
Okay. And Bob Sand, I want to thank you for coming in on such
sure.
short notice for this wonderful event.
Thank you for putting us on.
Next week on my show, we're going to be having live via the phone, Dr. Judith Orloff. She's a board-certified psychiatrist and assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA. She's got a brand new book coming out. She's a national best-selling author. It's called Emotional Freedom, and it's a guide to staying brave and positive during stressful times. And I'm sure that book of Dr. Judith Orloff's will be found at the Curiosity Shop as well. So I just want to thank everyone for joining me today and coming in. And for those of you that are listening on the air, I want everyone to please stay tuned. We've got Chuckaroo the Buckaroo coming in with Calling All Cowboys. And once again, this is Open Air. I'm Dawn Newton, and I will be back next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Awesome half pipe and free ride rider seeks a girlfriend for the winter. Must be like cute, live on the west side, have cable, and a dog. Hey, it's only for the winter.
A gathering of tribes. This will be a vegan potluck at Sierra and Vishnu's house next Monday at 6. Bring drums, dreams to share, crystals, and join us for a short group discussion of how to build a biodiesel house. Natural fiber clothing only, please. Cigarettes, no. Weed, fine.
4! Looking for a compatible fourth for our regular foursome. Successful candidate must have moved here in the past 2 years. Live in a gated community.
106.7 KPOV LPFM Bend.